from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Sox have just 3 hits. A double in the second by Andrew Vaughn, a single in the third by Nicky Lopez, and a single in the fifth by Martin Maldonado. And that has been it.
I like what we're doing. I like the way we're playing. I like the energy. I like, you know, this is an area where we got to grow.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Beautiful, sunny Saturday morning in the city, Bruce, and the Cubs play later today at home against the Brewers, continuing that series. Pregame coverage right here, 12:45, with Pat and Ron and Zach on the call. First pitch, 1:20. White Sox, meanwhile, also have a day game down in St. Louis. A little interleague action. They see an old friend. Yes, Lance Lynn.
Sure.
Well, they see an old White Sox player. I don't know how friendly he will be. He'll probably try to buzz the tower, take advantage of the Sox and kick him while they're down. That seems like something Lance Lynn might do. But Lance Lynn on the mound for the Cardinals against Eric Fetty, probably the only, well, he's a bright spot for the White Sox. There haven't been many, Bruce, but this is getting bad. It's already bad. It's getting worse. And all that's left is the history that is left to be made, because this team is on a historic descent.
Right. Well, look, trying to find positives to talk about the Chicago White Sox, okay? So it's you have to be really creative.
We got to
right
fill the segment, Bruce. We want to talk about positives. We're going to be able to break 10:04.
So White Sox bashing is too easy, okay?
I'm not bashing.
It's just too easy. I'm not saying you're bashing. I'm saying when you have conversation about the White Sox right now, to be creative and to give something interesting about the White Sox is extremely hard, okay? You watch the games, you try to pick out the positives from what's going on, and there's very little for White Sox fans to be able to project for this year. You see improvement like the catcher behind the plate in Corey Lee. You see some improvement to some of the pitchers that have come in around, like Soroka has started to pitch well. You certainly enjoy watching Crochet try to master being a starting pitcher. Outside of that, it's mostly a trip to the dentist.
You know, it's like getting a colonoscopy every single day of the baseball season.
It really is. And I do have some good news in a negative, positive way,
okay,
David. So the worst record in baseball history, modern baseball history since 1900 on, the worst winning percentage was the 1916 A's. They were 36-117. That's a .235 winning percentage. Okay, right now the White Sox are at .188 winning percentage. Okay, so that if they continue that way, they'll be the all-time worst winning percentage team. And that team was managed by Connie Mack, a Hall of Fame manager. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay,
had many winning seasons, great teams, 29, 30, 31, won the World Series.
Still waiting.
1935, the Boston Braves were 38-115, second worst winning percentage in baseball history, .248. Bill McKechnie was the manager of that team. Bill McKechnie had three World Series championship teams with three different teams in the Hall of Fame. The 1962 Mets are the third worst winning percentage at .250. They were 40-120 under manager Casey Stengel, also in the Hall of Fame. All of this bodes very well for...
Yeah. Waiting. Still waiting. Paid
manager
off, Bruce.
Pedro Grifol.
Are you telling me that Pedro's going to the Hall of Fame?
I'm telling you that success can follow failure.
Oh, well, thanks, Dad.
Okay.
Bruce.
History just told you that, David.
Oh, history tells me that. History is instructional.
It just did.
Yeah.
If you were listening.
All right. I was listening. I know. All right. Okay. I have some present.
Now, would you say that's a stretch, or is it a reality of where the White Sox are at right now?
Bruce, if that was any more of a stretch, I'd pop a hamstring. Okay.
Okay.
So,
wow. Very good.
Just
learning.
Saying. Excellent. So I have something about the future that might bode well. This is reality today. In the present, Brian Ramos, third baseman, being called up from Double A Birmingham. That to me smacks of a little desperation. You're calling up Double A Birmingham prospects. At the same time, I don't think anybody's going to raise an eyebrow necessarily or criticize it because it can't be much worse. He's a fourth-ranked prospect in your system. He plays third base. I don't know how he fits. It doesn't really matter. You're on a historically bad track here. Thanks for the research, Bruce. But what does Brian Ramos mean to the White Sox in this season?
Right now, he's a healthy player. You know, Mendick is suffering with a bad leg. They have Moncada's on the IL. I don't know if Mendick would switch to the IL. I didn't see the other part of the call-up with Ramos. But right now, they're looking for healthy players to play positions. Ramos is the best player to bring up right now. Do you think this means Colson Montgomery is next? He's at Double A.
Yeah.
He's 22.
It makes you wonder.
He has 40 strikeouts in 100 at bats. So there's still a lot of player development to be done there.
That's not good.
No, it's not great. You know,
it's not great.
No, but I mean, the idea is that healthy players and players to learn through player development, certainly a part of what the White Sox are going to have to continue to go through. So the rest of the season for the White Sox, David, the way I see it is, younger players like Ramos, younger players like Lee, other players like that, and older players like Pham, older players like Clevinger, players being developed and players keeping them credible to be able to compete in the major leagues and not go out there and lose every single day. That is the goal of the White Sox in 2024.
312-644-6767. Mike has been very patient in Glencoe. Mike, welcome inside the clubhouse. How are you this morning?
I'm fine, guys. Beautiful morning, and thanks for the history connection because I'd like to focus on that a little bit, but in a different direction. On John Schifrin, and not the haters thing, but rather his mispronunciation of Bill Veeck's name recently, because I think it's actually a big deal, because as you guys know, right now all Sox fans really have is history. When you have a team that's stunk for so long, it's really history that keeps us all together and talking and engaged, and, you know, Bruce, the guys you see at Max and Benny's when you come out each year. And like him or not, and I'm not a huge fan, Bill Veeck is part of that history. We don't have a team in Chicago if it wasn't for Bill Veeck. So when your announcer doesn't know enough about baseball to pronounce his name, that's another insult to the fan base. I think John is really, really trying hard. He's not a baseball announcer, and I'm not sure he's a baseball guy. But I think the Sox really need to do a better job of helping him, preparing him for the audience. And frankly, I think Stoney needs to do a better job of supporting him. What do you guys think?
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the phone call. Bruce?
Well, I can tell you one thing about John Schifrin. He's working his butt off to be the best broadcaster he can be. He's in the clubhouse early, and not many broadcasters do that. Some do. The Cub people do. Other teams have it. But John is in there going locker to locker, interviewing and talking to and getting to know the players and the coaches. He does something that I've never seen a announcer do. He comes down after the game to hear Pedro Grifol and talk to the players. So this is an incessant hard worker who wants to do great. Now, to your point, has he gotten over his skis trying to do too much too early? The answer is yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Broadcast the game. Be the White Sox announcer. Don't pretend to know the history of the team. No one expects John Schifrin to know, you know, the entire history of the Chicago White Sox just broadcasting into the second month of his career. But if you're going to allude to the history of the team, know the pronunciations of Bill Veeck, not Bill Veeck, okay? Because you do offend White Sox fans who are, as Michael puts it, pretty much down and out right now and are just in a mode of being wounded and laying there. So I get it. I can tell you, John, I believe is going to be an outstanding announcer for the White Sox.
Yeah, he might be, and he's got talent.
Slow down.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, and don't take your anger about the team out on a new announcer.
It's okay? More frustration than anger or pettiness.
Yeah,
I'm not
right.
Quite sure.
But I mean, it's like it's transference of your pain to what's obvious out there, which is a new announcer who has made some mistakes. The only thing I would say to John is just, you're a good broadcaster, okay? That's why they brought you here. Broadcast the games, lean on Stoney just a little bit more. Don't try to be an expert in your first 2 months of your career with the White Sox.
Yeah, I've been in a situation where you come to a market like Chicago from the outside and you're concerned about how quickly you'll be accepted. I did it 21 years ago. And it is a gradual process, and I think when you have a large platform the way John Schifrin does, the biggest mistake I think you can make is one that he already has made. You act like you've been there longer than you have, and you try to it's a tough line to walk, but when he's speaking on behalf of Sox fans everywhere, or if he's telling people, it seems as if like he got a little too cozy too soon. You know, I would just tell him, you know, I doesn't have to take advice from us, but just keep it professional. And the longer you rely on your talent, which is obvious, and anyone at this in this market better have it, and he does, rely on your talent. But, you know, stay away from the shtick and stay away from the pettiness. And eventually that will come the longer you're here. He's not doing himself any favors by alienating part of the fan base that might appreciate his talent. And, you know, treat people the right way, they'll treat you the right way.
David, it's a good point you make. Part of it is the ESPN thing, okay? When you're accepted and you're an announcer and you're considered an accomplished announcer at ESPN, there's something that goes along with it where you feel you can walk into any job and do well. And most of these announcers, like John, do. In for 1 day or 2 days and then walk away. It's so much different coming to a city like Chicago, sitting down and going, okay, I'm John Schifrin, I'm your new announcer. What do I have to offer you other than this daily routine of talking about what's going on the field? And the preparation that these ESPN announcers do is not sufficient for 162 games.
I respect you, but I think the whole ESPN thing doesn't really do much for me. Everybody who used to work for ESPN isn't the same. I mean, that's a...
But I'm talking about a mentality.
Okay.
The mentality is, we're ESPN, we're the best.
Well, that's arrogance you're talking about. And if he comes to Chicago with an arrogance problem, he needs to solve it quickly.
I'm not saying John's arrogant. I'm saying there is a perception about coming from ESPN.
Right.
When you're coming to Chicago, you have to learn what Chicago is. That doesn't happen in 5 weeks, okay? It takes a long time to do it. Jason Benetti had the benefit of being a great young announcer and from Chicago. Instant credibility, right? Okay. You are there. You know the history of the organization. You know the history of Chicago, okay? John does not have that luxury, so he is going to have to take some bumps and bruises. But the reason a lot of it is going his direction is because how awful the White Sox have been.
773 says it. Yeah, if the team were playing even 400 baseball, mispronouncing a name wouldn't be such a big deal. The mispronunciation was also joked about in a book title, Vec as in Wreck. You remember that one, Bruce. Maybe you should buy him a copy and take it to give it to Stoney.
Yeah, 5 weeks, David. Come on.
What do you mean 5 weeks?
I mean, he's been an announcer for the White Sox for five
weeks. I'm not necessarily as critical of him as others have been about the Vec mispronunciation or even Javi Baez.
Yeah, don't use the name if you don't know it.
Yeah, those are things you want to avoid typically. And I get that. And I'm not being overly forgiving or overly critical. I think you do want to wait a period of time. My reaction has been to when he went straight to the, you know, take that haters or however he worded it. We don't need to play it again, Robbie, please. Hands off the buttons there. Robbie was reaching for the button. Producers here, reach for the button as soon as you reference that.
It's,
enough already.
It's not John Schriffin's fault. Put that out there, David. Tell all your friends.
Bruce, call your friends. Don't speak for me. I don't like that shtick, but I'm also willing to give him a chance to be a professional broadcaster. And I think he needs to be more professional in his approach. Stop ducking the media, speak for yourself, and lose the shtick. That's all. Be a pro. Everyone will respect you more the more professional you are. And if you're an outsider or not, I'm speaking from experience here. All you've got to do is don't pretend you've been here longer than 5 minutes. And people will eventually, you know, accept you for what you bring. And that should be a professional broadcast. That's all. Now you got me triggered, Bruce.
This guy's going to be really good.
Okay. Now,
That's my prediction.
Okay.
Okay. Shtick aside, getting ahead of himself. You know, he's going through some rookie mistakes as a broadcaster in the worst possible situation for a broadcaster when you have a team that is possibly going to set an all-time record for the worst record in baseball history.
I have no sympathy. Look, he's getting paid well to do a job that people would kill for.
But it's not a point of sympathy, David. It's a point of don't put it all on John Schriffin.
I'm not.
I'm not saying you are. I'm saying there's a lot of that transference of we hate the White Sox, therefore we're going to try to find something else we don't like about what's going on right now.
That could be. Let's take a phone call on the matter. Bill is in Montgomery. He's got a thought on the issue and topic that Mike and Glencoe is smiling at home right now because he lit the match. Good morning, Bill.
Well, it's not lighting a match. It's just basic common intelligence. You had Len Casper come into this market. You've had other people come into the market just like yourself, David, and have performed the job competently. How do you not know that Bill Vec owned the team twice? How do you not do your research when you get in there? The things he's messing up with that is upsetting is just basic common stuff he should know from research. Before the game, before he got the job, spring training and everything. This isn't stuff we should have to make excuses for. This is stuff he should basically know from being a professional broadcaster. That's my opinion. You can cover for him all you want, Bruce, and you can get mad at me for my opinion.
I'm not mad at anybody.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate the phone call. A lot of people
know as a broadcaster, David, is not to use a name if you don't know how to pronounce it.
That's a good point. That's a pro tip because you have probably been, as I have, in situations where you wish you would have remembered that because it's not exactly fun to mispronounce anybody's name and it's certainly not professional.
No, I mean, when you came to town, I thought your name was David Haw.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know it was Haw.
Are you not making fun of my name? My name has been mispronounced all my life. It's been Huff. It's been Howe. It's been still. I got introduced last week at the Union League Club as David Howe. I've been here 21 years, people, please. It's like hee-haw. Thanks, Bruce.
Yeah, but when I first met you, I said, what did you say, David? Huh? So, I'm sorry.
David, huh? Okay. Thanks, Bruce. You know what I did when I first met you? I said, you work here?
Who's this old guy? Who's this old guy? Why isn't he retired?
They hired you? I used to listen to you in South Bend. You still have a job?
Yeah.
All right, Bruce.
Well, I'm glad you did when you were growing up and in short pants.
That's right.
Probably still wearing the same
and shirt. Overalls, right? Make an Indiana joke. Go ahead. Make an Indiana joke.
I don't do that.
I know.
I don't make Indiana jokes.
Okay.
I love Indiana.
All right. We're having fun. Good conversation, Bruce. I appreciate that. You know I respect you. When we come back, let's play a little chin music. We want to get back to the Cubs. Hayden Wesneski had some very interesting things to say. We'll talk about it next. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center... Keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's time for some chin music.
Hey, Alan, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
So starting down, I needed it. I needed to start in AAA. I was not in a good headspace. I didn't think my mechanics were right. And some of the guys were like, man, you shouldn't have made the team. No, I did not deserve to make the team. And that's the honest truth. And I wasn't pitching well, and I needed that time. I was just trying to come into camp healthy and ready to go. But I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I did a very good job this offseason looking back on it.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score, playing a little chin music with Bruce Levine and David Haw here till 11. That was Hayden Wesneski, Bruce, being very self-critical. And I know what he's saying, and you like that kind of introspection. But he sure looks like a guy who was prepared for the season. He's been very good since the Cubs have needed him and called him back and forth. What did you make of what he had to say? You were there.
Well, you know, that's why we used him for our chin music. Normally someone else is brushing a guy back. It's rare that a guy brushes himself back in our segment here. And that's the case with Wesneski, who's so... introspective about the fact that he just wasn't ready to pitch in the major leagues this year. And he had a bad year last year after showing really well after he was traded from the Yankees to the Cubs the year before at the end of the year that year. I thought it was tremendously refreshing to hear him talk about the fact that, you rarely hear a player say, I needed to go back to the minor leagues. I wasn't ready. Here's a guy that just got through throwing 6 1/3 innings, a shutout ball against one of the better teams in baseball right now, and telling you, hey, the organization, they were really smart sending me back. I wasn't ready. I needed to go back there. So I think so many times, David, we look at demotion as failure.
Mm-hmm.
And in sports, and in particular in baseball, demotion is a part of the process of success. And you see so many people that do succeed after that first trial of failure. The Anthony Rizzos of the world, hopefully now the Pete Crow Armstrongs of the world, who had horrible failure at the beginning, only to look back at it as a learning experience to succeed moving forward.
I don't disagree with that. I think it's also a good lesson, and certainly it's good advice for everybody in any profession, which makes me wonder, and we'll get back to Wesneski in a second, but why are there so many limits then on how often you can send players back and forth? We talk about Adbert Alzolay.
Yeah, it's
if ever there was a need for somebody to learn from failure and to succeed again, it should be a guy like Alzolay who had success. Now he's struggling to find it again. He really would benefit from a demotion, if you will, or going to Iowa to build up some confidence. And yet the rules exist that they don't really invite that kind of. They don't encourage that kind of pathway.
Even worse, they've changed the option rules to limit the amount of options that a player can go back to the minor leagues. That was done by the behest of the wants and the needs of the Players Association, who thought it was keeping players from being in the big leagues. To your point, David, it's the opposite, okay? It gives the players the opportunity to continue to succeed with that organization by going back. And the manipulation is more of a idea about injuries rather than failure now, and the idea that teams just don't have enough players to move up and back, and you're limiting it. It's counterintuitive to really what you want for players to be successful, for organizations to be good. And now you have huge fines in place if you're caught manipulating the injured list, and teams have to be worried about that. They can't simply send Alzolay to the minor leagues or to the injured list and say he's injured without an investigation by Major League Baseball and possible huge fines like took place for the Mets a couple years ago.
Well, Hayden Wesneski certainly has put the Cubs in a situation where they have a nice problem to consider when their starting rotation starts to get healthier. He pitched 6 1/3 innings yesterday against the Brewers, gave up only 3 hits, struck out 8, walked 2, and Bruce, regardless of the role they have asked him to play, he has played it well. So back to our original conversation in the last hour, when Justin Steele comes back as early as Monday when he's scheduled to pitch, you look at Kyle Hendricks is going to get another shot to rejoin the rotation. And you have Assad and Tyone and certainly Shota Imanaga, the best pitcher in baseball through the first month of the season. What do you do with Jordan Wicks? What do you do with Hayden Wesneski? What do you do with Ben Brown? What do you do with these guys who are promising starting pitchers and you have a bullpen problem on your hands? Is Wesneski a guy that you think is pliable enough? They'll keep him in Chicago long enough to where he'll play a versatile role and pitch in various times throughout the game.
Well, let's go backwards forward to answer your question. Is Hector Neris your answer as a closer?
I think the answer at the closer is not on the team right now.
Okay, I think it is. I think it is. I think it pretty much has to be, because where are you inventing that guy from showing up before the July 31st trading deadline? How is he getting to your team?
Well, professionally, I'm going to be patient and urgent and hopefully try to balance those things at the same time, because you want to keep the pressure on while understanding the Cubs have some good arms in the bullpen. But if I'm a Cubs fan and I'm looking at this from the 35,000-foot view and big picture, I'm looking at trades being made. We talked about Arise going to the Padres. There's another deal being made this weekend. Why is it too early to trade for a closer? Why would you want to wait any longer? These games count. Is there anybody out there? Is there, you know, the closer in Houston, not Josh Hader, but the backup closer in Houston? There are other guys out there you could talk about bringing in to give him looks.
I know.
Maybe he's on another team. That's all, Bruce. That's what I mean.
You know, I mean, you're right in theory, but does Colorado have a closer to trade you? Okay. Do the White Sox have a closer to trade you? I don't.
Michael Kopech, Ryan Pressly is who I was talking about in Houston.
Okay.
There are other names out there that might make some sense to try.
If you traded for Kopech today, Are you sure he could do the job for the Chicago Cubs at the end?
No, okay. I'm not. But
right, I mean, so and what do you? How much are you giving up for him? So he's got another year left after, and then he's a free agent. So I mean, your theory is correct. The plausibility of being able to trade somebody in May, except when you have a team like Miami who made a trade right now and knows that they're going to be horrible, maybe all-time horrible the rest of the year, and trading to get better players for the future. I get it. It's a horrible thing you do to your fan base, though.
Well, it is.
Miami was in the playoffs last year, okay? And now look where they're at, you know, a few months later. It's a bad thing to do. It's a bad optic for a fan base and for a team.
I guess what I'm saying, Bruce, is that if I'm answering it fully, I'm willing to wait, and I think it makes sense to try every conceivable option that you have. You have to exhaust those kind of options and maximize your resources on hand. But if you get to the point where it's July 1st and you're still blowing leads, see, because I think if the Cubs had a lockdown closer,
I don't think you have to.
I think if it's July, if the Cubs had a lockdown closer, let me finish the thought.
Okay?
If you had a lockdown closer, right, you'd be in first place alone right now, and you'd be one of the best teams, if not the best team in the National League through the first month, even with the injuries. The lack of one. The lack of one has hurt them.
I mean, where do lockdown closers come from?
Well, you can rent them. You can trade for them. Typically, other teams.
Oh, no.
I don't know if you develop them.
How are they created?
Well, each lockdown closer has a different story. I don't know if there's any origin story that's similar. What's the pathway? You're saying develop one.
The pathway is, do you have really good arms and young guys that have enough confidence to handle that role?
You might. Ben Brown would fit the bill. He's got the mentality. He's got the stuff. And certainly, he's somebody who you trust to get three big outs because he's gotten them. He was very good the other day before things fell apart in the fifth. He could give you that kind of a performance if you trust a rookie like that. Yeah. And maybe I'm overstating significance of one. I don't know.
No, I don't think you are. I mean, I think you have to have a closer. I don't agree with counsel that you don't have to have a closer, that you're just trying to get 27 outs. I think he would agree with you. He would agree with this conversation saying, hey, dude, we're getting 27 outs because we haven't created that closer yet. We haven't had a young guy to show enough confidence and to have enough success here to put him in that role and say, you're the guy, okay? Clearly, it's not Alzolay at this point, right?
Right.
You can't keep going down that road. But it could be Brown. It could be Wisniewski, okay? It could be one of those two guys. It could be Horton down the road. Who knows? I mean, it's not likely. But, again, the Cubs have some really good options because they have good arms that are getting good experience right now and having success. The problem they have right now is they have a worn-out bullpen. Neris has been getting by with some some luck behind him. I don't think he's the answer.
Let's squeeze in a quick phone call before we take a break. Owen has a thought on the Cubs' closing situation. Good morning, Owen. Welcome inside the clubhouse.
Hi, guys. Not that I care about the Cubs that much. I'm starting to lean towards them. But if you guys remember, in 2005, the Sox went through three closers. They started with Takatsu. Hermanson got hurt,
yep,
and then they ended up getting Jenks from the Angels. I think the Cubs should make a move for Kopech. First of all, Kopech's not being used right as a closer when you start bringing him in the eighth inning. They got a manager that doesn't know how to manage the bullpen over there. I think a change of scenery would be a great thing. Mm-hmm. The guy's got closer stuff. I think the biggest problem is sometimes it gets a little wild. And I think it's, you know, Bruce, you're kind of right in the fact that the Cubs do have options. You don't need a closer now, maybe, but you need it when you get to the playoffs. And I think that's what really happened because Jenks caught fire. And if you remember, I think he had one time right where he got 41 guys in a row out. I think Kopech is the answer for the Cubs. And why not trade early for him? See what he can do for him. If not, what are you going to lose on? But, you know, in a trade for him.
Thanks, Owen. Appreciate the phone call, Bruce. You're going to hear that sentiment a lot on this station, I think, if Michael Kopech ever gets to the point where he's consistent.
Jenks was a desperation move for the White Sox. They'd already lost the two closers to injury, okay? And they had this big arm that came from the Angels that failed elsewhere. And, you know, Ozzie would be a great guy to talk about this at some point, you know, the ascension of him and, you know, the way that he came in blowing 100 miles an hour and being the guy, you know, at the end who was there to help them win a world championship. But it's not rocket science, but it is proper ascension and proper mindset for young pitchers to feel like they can do this job.
We should really book important. Bobby Jenks from the Windy City Thunderbolts. We should talk to him on Saturday morning. How about that, Bruce?
Love the idea.
Can we get down that? Maybe he can also still close. Maybe he's got some heat he can still throw. We'll see. All right, when we come back for our final segment, some player moves on both sides of town. We'll tell you about them next. Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome back to our ninth inning, doing our best not to blow this save. So, Bruce, little nuggets on X or Twitter, as you know it. Taylor McGregor from the Marquee Sports Network says, Miles Mastroboni is here. Took over Matt Mervis's locker. So Matt Mervis apparently back to Iowa. Miles Mastroboni brings his left-handed bat to Chicago. That's one. Here's the other. Daryl Van Skowen from the Sun-Times has an interview with Brian Ramos at his locker. Dream come true for the White Sox. Brian Ramos up, making his major league debut today in St. Louis for this White Sox. So two minor moves, but big deals for the players involved.
Well, Danny Mendick goes on the IL with a lower back strain. That's the other move for the White Sox in correspondence with this. And I'm not a Mastroboni hater, but right now the Cubs need offense.
Yep.
Okay. This is not a move to help the offense. David Peralta, who was signed to a minor league contract and is playing at AAA for the Chicago Cubs, that would be the move that I would have made today, okay? If you're not going to bring up Peralta, you might as well release him, okay? I think he has a contract that if you bring him up to the major leagues, you guarantee his contract for the year.
Hmm?
I don't understand the hesitation. I'll try to find out today and report on it. But right now the Cubs need offense, and you know, Mastroboni, nice player, good defender, not necessarily the offense that you need. Mervis, unfortunately, in his brief trial here, didn't do much better than he did the first time that he was up last year.
I'm fine with Mastroboni being back on the menu. I don't have a problem with that. I think in certain roles he can help you. He is not in the lineup today. Quickly, Bruce, Horner, Tauchman, Happ, Morrell, Bush, Swanson, who needs to get hitting? Patrick Wisdom is the DH, Pete Crow Armstrong, PCA back in center, and Miguel Amaya, the catcher for Jameis and Tyone. Can I give you the Sox quick lineup for them, Sox fans? Nicky Lopez, Tommy Pham, Gavin Sheets, Eloy Jimenez, Benintendi batting fifth, Robbie Grossman sixth, Corey Lee, Paul DeYoung, and Braden Shoemake for Eric Fetty on the mound against Lance Lynn, an old teammate. Not maybe old friend, maybe old friend of yours, Bruce, but I don't know. He made some enemies in Chicago too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Basically, you know, a lot of people pointed his direction as being one of the clubhouse lawyers that helped take the Chicago White Sox down and had the White Sox trading all those veterans and five pitchers at the trading deadline last year. True or false, but it was failure on the part of him and some of his comrades that elicited the trade. That was the reason they were traded, David. Not because they were clubhouse lawyers, but because they weren't getting the job done.
James Fox, that's a good point, Bruce. James Fox, who was a friend of the program and a really good listener, plugged in with the White Sox, He points out that Ramos was the only infielder on the 40-man to bring up with Lenin Sosa injured at Charlotte. So when I said it smacked of desperation, maybe not. Maybe it was just this is what you got to do when you have players falling at the rate the White Sox have them falling. Either way, Brian Ramos, a happy young man today making his Major League debut. Bruce, we're out of time. This was a fun show.
We thank Pete Crow Armstrong for coming on, Robbie Torinos for a job well done, and always as our producer. David, thank you for a lot of fun and our great listeners. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine and our website at 670thescore.com, writing Cubs and Sox all the time. David, look forward to seeing you next week.
Look forward to it, Bruce. Look forward to Monday morning, Mullion Hall, 5:30 to 10, weekday mornings here on The Score. Thank you for listening to Inside the Clubhouse. Have a great weekend, everybody. You've been listening to Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome back to our ninth inning, doing our best not to blow this save. So, Bruce, little nuggets on X or Twitter, as you know it. Taylor McGregor from the Marquee Sports Network says, Miles Mastroboni is here. Took over Matt Mervis's locker. So Matt Mervis apparently back to Iowa. Miles Mastroboni brings his left-handed bat to Chicago. That's one. Here's the other. Daryl Van Skowen from the Sun-Times has an interview with Brian Ramos at his locker. Dream come true for the White Sox. Brian Ramos up making his Major League debut today in St. Louis for this White Sox. So two minor moves, but big deals for the players involved.
Well, Danny Mendick goes on the IL with a lower back strain. That's the other move for the White Sox.
Okay.
In correspondence with this. And I'm not a Mastroboni hater, but right now the Cubs need offense.
Yep.
Okay. This is not a move to help the offense. David Peralta, who was signed to a minor league contract and is playing at AAA for the Chicago Cubs, that would be the move that I would have made today. Okay. If you're not going to bring up Peralta, you might as well release him. Okay. I think he has a contract that if you bring him up to the major leagues, you guarantee his contract for the year.
Hmm.
I don't understand the hesitation. I'll try to find out today and report on it. But right now the Cubs need offense. And, you know, Mastroboni, nice player, good defender, not necessarily the offense that you need. Mervis, unfortunately, in his brief trial here, didn't do much better than he did the first time that he was up last year.
I'm fine with Mastroboni being back on the menu. I don't have a problem with that. I think in certain roles he can help you. He is not in the lineup today. Quickly, Bruce, Horner, Tauchman, Happ, Morrell, Bush, Swanson, who needs to get hitting? Patrick Wisdom is the DH, Pete Crow Armstrong, PCA back in center, and Miguel Amaya, the catcher for Jameis and Tyone. Can I give you the Sox quick lineup for them, Sox fans? Nicky Lopez, Tommy Pham, Gavin Sheets, Eloy Jimenez, Benintendi batting fifth, Robbie Grossman sixth, Corey Lee, Paul DeYoung, and Braden Shoemake for Eric Fetty on the mound against Lance Lynn, an old teammate. Not maybe old friend, maybe old friend of yours, Bruce, but I don't know. He made some enemies in Chicago too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Basically, you know, a lot of people pointed his direction as being one of the clubhouse lawyers that helped take the Chicago White Sox down and had the White Sox trading all those veterans and five pitchers at the trading deadline last year. True or false, but it was failure on the part of him and some of his comrades that elicited the trade. That was the reason they were traded, David. Not because they were clubhouse lawyers, but because they weren't getting the job done.
James Fox, that's a good point, Bruce. James Fox, who was a friend of the program and a really good listener, plugged in with the White Sox. He points out that Ramos was the only infielder on the 40-man to bring up with Lenin Sosa injured at Charlotte. So when I said it smacked of desperation, maybe not. Maybe it was just this is what you got to do when you have players falling at the rate the White Sox have them falling. Either way, Brian Ramos, a happy young man today making his Major League debut. Bruce, we're out of time. This was a fun show.
We thank Pete Crow Armstrong for coming on, Robbie Torinos for a job well done, and always as our producer. David, thank you for a lot of fun and our great listeners. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine and our website at 670thescore.com, writing Cubs and Sox all the time. David, look forward to seeing you next week.
Look forward to it, Bruce. Look forward to Monday morning, Mullion Hall, 5:30 to 10, weekday mornings here on The Score. Thank you for listening to Inside the Clubhouse. Have a great weekend, everybody. You've been listening to Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.